Good morning and welcome back to another edition of Sunday Focus. We have been very fortunate to be doing a variety of segments with the organization Call the Freedom. They're at the forefront of helping victims of sex and labor trafficking navigate a new path. We've always emphasized it's never an easy journey, but the hope is that through education, others can help those being trafficked in our area and state. We've been talking with the CEO and founder of Call the Freedom, Becky Rasmussen, about this amazing organization in a variety of segments about sex and labor trafficking, survivor stories, how the law connects with Call the Freedom and those that they serve, and the volunteers of the organization. Call the Freedom is part of every step of a survivor's next chapter, even with housing. We are lucky to have some special guests with us in the studios that has been partners with Call the Freedom for a while, and also the director of grant management with Call the Freedom. We have, of course, Becky Rasmussen, and a welcome to Rachel Schartz and Eric Kirkfleet. Eric, he's part of the Alpine Companies, great partner with Call the Freedom. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. We're so excited to be here.
We have to address kind of some headlines in the news recently. They were some stories involving sex trafficking in our state. And I'm wondering if you can break down each of these stories for us.
Yeah, there was actually two stories that we published. You can go to calltofreedom.org and look at the more details of that. But Rapid City case of a man who is actually from Wyoming who came to South Dakota, and he was on probation in Wyoming. And so he violated his probation, came to Rapid City area, and actually just admitted to committing the same sex crimes in South Dakota that he did in Wyoming. And so he was involved with four girls and actually pimped them out through using meth and different drugs as well. And he has those charges pending in Pennington County. And then we have one, and I've been in contact now with a few leaders in Winter, South Dakota. So a lot of people say that this doesn't happen in rural communities, and we're here to say it does. Actually, if you look at Polaris, which is a national human trafficking hotline, they've had a report from every county in the United States. And so it's important for us to realize that rural communities are not immune to this. Actually, this case is kind of unique, where the individual was actually a woman who was in 2020 and 2021 pimping out young girls to another male.
Yeah, so, you don't hear that too often.
And I think it's interesting because obviously we know how this triangle works, because you have somebody who is selling and you have somebody who's buying. So you have a buyer here and you have a seller here, and you have young girls under the age that were minors that were involved with this case. And I think it's hard for communities when the buyer isn't being penalized at this point in time. He is still out within the community. And so there's a lot of confusion and questions as far as education. What does this mean? How do we protect? How does this happen within the community? And so it's important to talk about these cases. So you can go to calltofreedom.org and see a few more details on that case. The woman did actually plead guilty and is in process now. The male who was involved in this case as a buyer is still walking in the community. I think there is some investigation happening, but we're not privy to that information.
Yeah, when people are shocked hearing these stories happen, whether it's east or out west, you actually had your experience out west, and that's how Call of Freedom got started.
Yeah, the Sturgis rally in 2015 had an encounter with a young girl during the rally and forever changed my life. And so, you know, I think the important part here and just to the community is get educated. We have opportunities through calltofreedom.org where you can get involved. You can learn more. We have an informational luncheon in April, and those are free to the community where you can come and learn about this. I think when the communities reach out to us, and I think a question you had is, do we work with every one of those victims that come through these cases? And the answer is we want to. It doesn't always happen that way. And so it's really important for us as a team at Call to Freedom to be connected as to many resources and community partners so that does happen naturally. But for a variety of reasons, we don't always see those victims walk through the doors, and sometimes we do. But our goal is, if you're out there and you've been victimized or you have questions about that, please reach out to Call to Freedom. We want to help you navigate that.
just like it's hard to hear these stories, it's harder for the victims to even come forward and have that strength.
A lot of times, those that are being victimized in these situations or impacted by human trafficking, sextortion, or commercial sexual exploitation don't even know they're victims. You research these cases, you learn that these guys are really good at what they do. Manipulation is their game, and they know how to manipulate a victim to really think that they're a part of the process and making the decision. But with trafficking, the use of force, fraud, or coercion has to be present unless you're a minor. Under the age of 18, any child that is pimped out or trafficked, that is human trafficking, because force, fraud, and coercion does not need to be proven within those cases.
Now, just like getting into Call to Freedom, you are a part of every journey. That's part of finding safe, affordable housing too. And Becky, just as a reminder, how does Call to Freedom begin this process of helping survivors?
Yeah, we actually, it just depends where that individual's journey is. Sometimes we get in the emergency stage where they're just getting out of a situation like we talked about. And that looks different than a supportive stage where they're looking for housing and employment. That doesn't happen right away. And the journey really depends. I've worked with individuals who have been trafficked for 3 months, and we had a woman walk through the doors that had been trafficked for over 50 years of her life. And so trauma looks different. Support mm-hmm. looks different. But one of the things about Call to Freedom is we don't put a timeline on support. We want to make sure that we're there as long as that individual wants help. Call to Freedom is a resource for each of those individuals. And so they can get connected through first responders, just survivors themselves actually refer others. Once they get into the program, they realize Call to Freedom really knows what they're doing. And I've been successful in this program. They will refer their network of individuals that are also still being victimized. And then we work with first responders, from child protection services to law enforcement to emergency departments as well. But then we get into, and we're going to talk more about that,
yeah,
and the housing piece. And that usually begins in a supportive, or what we call a transitional housing. And that's a little bit later in some people's journeys. But we may have individuals, I just had an email come in from a woman in a rural community who had been trafficked, never got services, but's doing pretty good in her life. And she just wanted to connect with people that understood. She has a job, she's maintaining that job, but she just needed support in a different way. So she's part of our survivor support group now and getting that connection with other individuals. So it looks really different, and it varies based on where that person is in their journey.
When you haven't been independent for so long, it's hard to know what that feels like again. But when they do feel it, the survivors, it's powerful to get their power back.
Yeah. And it looks different for each person. You know, sometimes survivors feel called to share their voice, and other times they don't. They just want to hold a job. They just want to go to school. They want to be moms. They want to be normal individuals. And others feel like, yeah, I want to be empowered by sharing my voice. And so wherever that survivor is, we want to meet them to make sure that they enter in the fullness of their calling and have hope and healing through the process.
Yeah, we're going to get more into that. If you are just listening, we are being joined right now with Becky Rasmussen, the CEO and founder of Call to Freedom. We also have Eric Kirkfleet. He is with Alpine Communities, one of the partners with Call to Freedom. And right now, to talk about the housing, we have Rachel Schartz. She is the Director of Grants Management with Call to Freedom. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Christine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. Why don't you tell us more about your role with Call to Freedom?
Absolutely. I have the amazing privilege of serving as Call to Freedom's Director of Grants Management. So I get to really fund the mission, fund the vision. And grants is a critical part of that. And it's really fun on the housing side of things in particular to orchestrate that process of, it's not just funding, it's, you know, finding those partners like Alpine Companies, facilitating those partnerships. It's really, it's a beast, and it's a lot of fun and privilege to be able to do that, to serve in that capacity as overseeing the grants.
As I'm getting to know Becky more and more, it's hard to find someone that doesn't know Becky or is somehow connected to Becky. So how did you get involved with Call to Freedom?
Absolutely. I would say we started actually in a volunteer capacity. It was kind of kismet. I want to say maybe 2018 was around then, where I just really had a niche in the federal grants landscape, where I just had this the awesome privilege of having worked previously directly with survivors in a direct service capacity, and then transitioned into writing grants just because I wanted to be able to, you know, it was hard to discern how do I use my time and talents and the gifts that I have to be able to advance this mission in the best way possible. And so for me, grants was just this beautiful combination of salesmanship and storytelling, and to do it in service of a mission that I'm incredibly passionate about was really exciting. So I'd had, you know, some experience writing federal grants and just really connected with Becky. I'm born and raised in Humboldt and the South Dakota girl, and wanted to really further this mission locally where, you know, you hear that narrative as the two of you have talked about over the course of this series about, well, does it really happen here? It absolutely does. And so I wanted to be able to write grants to advance nonprofits who are doing this work at the local and state level here in South Dakota. And so helped work on one of the first federal grants that Call to Freedom had received in a volunteer capacity. Went off to college on the East Coast, did some work on the public policy realm there in DC and the Boston area for some years, and then felt kind of a calling back to South Dakota. That was around 2023, and just really felt God placing on my heart to get back involved with Call to Freedom. So Becky and I reconnected, and it was just really perfect timing that Call to Freedom was in a place where they were able to take this grants kind of management arm into a full arm of its own, where I was able to walk into that role. So just really privileged and humbled. And I'd say what was really cool, too, about having worked out on the East Coast on human trafficking issues, and it was amazing how some of the roles that I had been tasked with in D.C. and Boston was, you know, finding what nonprofits exist in this area across the United States and what work are they doing and how do we eliminate silos? How do we really combat this from all angles? And even at that level, Call to Freedom's name would rise to the top as one of the four most leading agencies in the United States. And so just what a privilege that South Dakota has Call to Freedom as a resource and that I can now work for Call to Freedom full time. It's incredible.
So since you mentioned being on the East Coast and now back here in South Dakota, how did the needs differ from both coasts since you were working with on both sides? I know that's a question I'm kind of throwing out there just from your perspective.
Yeah, I think education and awareness can look very different, certainly. As we said, it's here in rural states, you just hear that perpetual narrative that it doesn't really happen here. We really pride ourselves on the fact that we have very safe, very community-oriented, you know, state. And that's absolutely true. I'm incredibly proud to be a South Dakotan, but we can't, you know, keep telling ourselves, bury our heads in the sand and say, but we don't have nefarious things happening here as well. Human trafficking, it absolutely happens in every community in the world, including every community in South Dakota. And so I think community education and awareness can absolutely look differently, where some other states might be starting the conversation with a baseline of, okay, we acknowledge that this happens. Let's talk about how to tackle it in the best way possible, how to deport our resources. Here, the conversation often starts with, let's all get to that point of agreeing that it's happening. That's a different conversation to have.
Yeah.
I think, too, the nature of the crime can look different here, where I'd say statistically we might see more familial trafficking, which is a pretty scary thing to reckon with. Rural communities statistically see more of that trafficking or exploitation facilitated by a family or household member. In 2024, 1 in 6 Call to Freedom clients were trafficked or exploited by a parent, by a family member, or a household member. And that should stop us in our tracks and say, what's happening here in the state of South Dakota that we see that in greater rates? And it makes combating it different and oftentimes more challenging. It's really hard to recognize and name this crime as something when it's happening under your own roof. Mm. And that's what Becky spoke to earlier about this fact that victim survivors may often not understand that they have been victims of human trafficking. You know, we can kind of see why when we dive deeper into some of those stats about, well, how can I have been human trafficked when I've only lived with my mom and dad and I'm only 6 years old? And it boggles the mind. And so I think we're up against a different type of battle here in South Dakota. And again, just really, really privileged and honored to be on the front lines at Call to Freedom serving those folks.
When it comes to housing survivors, Rachel, would you say that that's one of the barriers that survivors have in order to get into a new home just because they're not really understanding what exactly happened to them?
Without a doubt. You know, I think there are a few different barriers that our survivors will face. I think poverty or economic hardship is number one. That history of with addiction or struggle with addiction is probably number two. And criminal history as well, through that forced criminality and some of the things that they've been subjected to against their will. And so when you look at all of those different things and they're kind of intersecting factors and background, you're not a good renter on paper, you know, and logically we think who wants a neighbor who's someone who might be struggling with substance use or has a history of substance use, who might have a felony on his or her record. On paper, it makes complete logical sense to say, this is not someone who I want to take a risk on and I want to be my neighbor. And so that's what is really incredible about the partners, especially with Alpine companies, that we have those folks who bring humanity to housing to say, I'm going to actually take a deeper look at this application. I recognize that human trafficking is happening here. I recognize the ways that it impacts those who are seeking housing. And I'm going to work with Call to Freedom to make sure that those individuals have a fair shot at housing. Because without it, I think, you know, where do these folks go?
Yeah.
They're caught up in that cycle of exploitation and abuse where they are oftentimes fully reliant upon their trafficker or traffickers for housing. And so it's really incredible to have partners like Alpine who are willing to take a chance on these folks.
But when you write the grants really quick, Rachel, is it different just depending on the situation or how does that process work?
One of the different grant programs that we have is we offer transitional housing. And so that it might look different, again, kind of what Becky spoke to about the type of housing that you're looking to fund or what supports each individual victim or survivor needs. For the transitional phase, we have a really cool, robust housing program that will offer folks 6 to 24 months of housing, where the name really says it all. It's that transitional phase. It's that bridge to they're out of that emergency stage. They're a little bit more stable in their life. They're working towards independence, including financial or just self-sufficiency across the board, where we get to come in and help navigate that whole process, help them find and obtain the housing, or give them the skills and supportive services, be it case management or occupational therapy, to be able to sustain and maintain their housing environment, including financially. And providing rental assistance too, a stepping stone such that when we step in and help, like offer that lifting hand up, that they can work towards building their own savings and be independent and self-sufficient into the long term.
That's awesome. If you were just listening, we're getting a better idea about the transitional process with survivors of Call to Freedom. Becky Rasmussen, CEO and founder, is with us of Call to Freedom. We also have Rachel. She just spoke. She's also with Call to Freedom for the Grants Management Department. And now Eric Kirkfleet, he's with Alpine Companies. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about your role with Alpine Companies and how you got involved with Call to Freedom.
Yeah, my role has evolved over the years. We have a lot going on at Alpine Companies. So we have a property management division, maintenance division, residential and commercial brokerage, staging and design, and we also do investment funds. And so I was one of the co-founders there at the beginning in 2015 when we started Alpine Property Management. And my role has kind of shifted over the years. Back in 2015, I was working full-time as an attorney at Lynn Jackson Law Firm. And then I jumped over to Alpine full-time in June of 21. As in-house counsel and responsible broker. And then in 2024, I moved out of the in-house counsel role and moved more into overseeing the financial aspects of the Alpine companies. I also have my own law firm where I practice real estate and business law. And I sit on several nonprofit boards, and one of those that I helped create was Alpine Cares, which is the charitable arm of the Alpine Companies, and I sit on the board of directors of Alpine Cares, and I mostly help facilitate relationships with partner organizations like Call to Freedom. We've been a proud supporter of Call to Freedom for several years. We've hosted annual charity concerts and charity golf tournaments to raise funds for several nonprofits like Call to Freedom. But in 2023, we felt called to do more than make donations, so given that we own and manage rental properties, we felt like we were in a position where we could help with the housing side of things. So I attend Central Church, and in August of 23, Pastor Jeff was doing a series called That's a Great Question, and he had Becky Rasmussen join him on stage, and they talked about the needs for housing for human trafficking survivors and other challenges. And so at that point in time, it just felt like God was screaming at us to do more when it comes to help with housing and call to freedom. So in December of 23, we hosted a luncheon to launch a housing initiative with the goal of raising $100,000 to provide housing for human trafficking survivors. And Becky joined us at that luncheon, as well as Mary Jackson, who you've had on the program here before.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And due to our generous donors of both Alpine Cares and Call to Freedom, they answered the call and we met our fundraising goal. So our initial idea was we were going to buy a small multifamily property that was available for Call to Freedom's clients. We weren't able to make that pencil or make that work. So we pivoted to what we have currently in place, and that's a more of a subsidy model where we have this pool of funds available for security deposits and rental subsidies to help bridge the gap between market rent and what Call to Freedom's clients can afford. And so that's opened up all of our 700 units that we manage in Sioux Falls and the surrounding communities to Call to Freedom's clients.
So walk me through how you would interact with a survivor, how that process works when it comes to becoming a renter with Alpine Companies.
Yeah, so we'll typically receive a referral from Call to Freedom, and we have to run it through our standard process of our, we have an objective rental selection criteria that we have to manage as a property management company to make sure that we're treating everybody fairly and equally across the board. And so but as Rachel was talking, I love the term bring humanity to housing. And that's what we try to do when we receive a referral like from Call to Freedom, is we try to make something work there. So there's some unique things that we've done. And that's, for example, the subsidy. You know, if someone doesn't qualify from a financial perspective, but they're one of Call to Freedom's clients, we're going to make something work by having those subsidies available. So.
Yeah, I know that the markets are crazy nowadays, but is it easier to be a renter now? Or what are some of the challenges survivors of Call to Freedom face as a renter?
It's a little bit easier to be a renter now than it has been in the past. Sioux Falls has built a ton of apartments over the last couple of years, and we're in the process of having that demand catch up to the supply of what's been built. So the vacancy percentages in Sioux Falls have crept up some, and we're into the double-digit vacancies now for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some rent specials and rent concessions out there, just generally speaking. So it's a little bit more of a renter's market than it has been in the, over the past several years. You'll see some rent concessions across town and that kind of thing, but it's still challenging to be a renter. It's still challenging to find safe and affordable housing. I mean, rents have continued to increase over the last several years. So it is not without its challenges. That's certainly true, especially for a lot of Call to Freedom's clients where they are at that poverty level. So they really need the assistance or the creative problem solving that we can do to make sure that they're able to have that safe and affordable housing. And we love what Call to Freedom does in their holistic model of taking care of the entire person, and that allows for us to focus on just the one small piece of it, the housing piece of it, and to do what we do best, and that's to provide the safe and affordable housing.
What's that feeling like when you hand over the keys to survivors for their first place that they've had to themselves in a long time?
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, providing that safe and affordable housing. And we have some testimonials from some of the renters or clients that we've helped out where they've said, you know, I feel safe here. I feel like this is home. And that's what it's all about, is providing a place where someone can say, this is my home. I feel safe here. I don't have to worry about whether I can afford rent or not. This is, yeah, a place I call home. And that's, we love that.
Either you or Rachel, what is that experience like in your perspective, just to see someone becoming a renter and having their own property for the first time?
Incredible. I know the woman actually that Eric was talking about, and I got the privilege of being there too when we handed the keys. You can't you can't put that into words, honestly, the feeling. But I think too, just what this partnership has meant for these clients, it's so much more than housing. It really is. It sounds cheesy to say, obviously, it's that basic human need, and the dignity that it gives them is incredible. It's beyond words. But it's someone for the first time taking the time, the intentionality to learn more about them and their experiences, to validate that what they are more than what they've been through. They are more than the sum of their experiences. And on the flip side, traffickers in their business model relies upon us not doing that. They're banking on us just looking at somebody on a piece of paper saying they struggle with substance abuse, they are a felon, they are XYZ, and us rejecting them literally for housing, for so much more than that. And to, they do that intentionally to keep them reliant, to keep them stuck in the cycle of abuse and exploitation. And so when Alpine steps in and breaks that cycle to say, hey, I see you as a human being who's not only absolutely worthy of housing and having a roof over your head, but I want to learn more about you. And I want to give you the time, care, and intentionality that you deserve as a person and bring that dignity back to this experience. It's so much more than housing. And I can't put into words what it's like to watch these men, women, and children get to experience that. It's not just handing a set of keys. It's giving them hope. It really is.
And speaking about strong partnerships, Becky Rasmussen, can you just, from your perspective, the importance of partnerships like Alpine Companies and anyone else with Call to Freedom?
They're invaluable. If anybody has been in a situation, a victim of any crime, navigating our systems is overwhelming just individually, but not having partners to be able to come alongside. And really, when we would talk about that criminality piece, they didn't choose to be a criminal. Yes. They were forced to be a criminal by their trafficker to keep them imprisoned in that cycle. Mm-hmm. And when Eric and his team at Alpine Companies come alongside and say, you know what, we believe in them. We want to give them an opportunity. We see beyond their record. We see beyond what you see on a sheet of paper. Their traffickers actively tell them, people won't believe you. This is impossible. And when our community comes together and says, we're going to find solutions to these problems, it becomes possible. And to just to Rachel said and to Eric said, to see a survivor say, I never thought I would be here. I never thought I would have my kids back. I've never had my own place. And when the community and Alpine and others come together and say, you know what, we're going to find solutions to these problems, it's a game changer. And I'm just so grateful to our team as well that's very innovative and finding solutions, because there's a lot of system, you know, areas that it present challenges for that next chapter of hope and healing.
Absolutely. And it's partners like Alpine Companies. We've had Eric Kirkfleet joining us, and we've also been talking to Rachel Schartz of Call to Freedom, Becky Rasmussen as well. Anything else that you guys would like to add about this great conversation before we wrap up? Because it really does give a perspective of people who are transitioning with Call to Freedom.
Yeah, I think, you know, the bottom line is we can't do this without partnerships. It is not one organization that actually can fight and combat this issue of human trafficking. It isn't. It takes the entire community providing solutions, coming alongside and being part of those solutions for those that are being victimized. And so we are just really grateful for our partners. We also want to challenge our community. Get involved. You can go to caldofreedom.org. We have opportunities where you're like, I've never heard of trafficking.
Yeah.
What is trafficking? You know, on April 17th, under caldofreedom.org, under events, we have an informational luncheon that you can sign up for. It is held in the Sioux Falls area. If you're outside of Sioux Falls, there is a Zoom option that you can sign up for. So we don't limit based on location. You can be involved at any capacity, and that's free to our community. It's an hour and a half. We'll serve you lunch. And we want to talk about, we actually have lived experiences from those that we've served sharing, what does this look like in South Dakota? And like Rachel said, I think it's just really hard to wrap your mind around, how could somebody do this to another human being? How could somebody not value another person? Yeah. God never created people in that image, but somewhere along life, things happen and values get out of place. And We're just challenging our community. Come alongside us. We welcome you. We have volunteer opportunities. We have events. But we also, if you find a partnership like Eric did with Alpine, we welcome you in the fight. So go to calltofreedom.org and we'll connect with you there.
Wonderful. You took the words right out of my mouth, Becky, about the events coming up. So thank you so much for that. Again, we've been hanging out with Call to Freedom this morning, talking about the transitional periods for survivors of Call to Freedom. Becky Rasmussen, Rachel Schartz, and Eric Kirkfleet with Alpine Companies. Appreciate everybody coming out this morning. Thank you so much.
Sunday Focus is a public affairs program of Results Radio, Town Square Media, Sioux Falls.